Sunday, the 31st of January, Tessayin Shvat, Rabbi Elimelech Meisels, Kol Ha'omer Dover B'Shem Omro, Mevi Geula L'Olam.
Okay, as you just heard, the shiur will be about the Maimar Chazal, Kol Ha'omer Dover B'Shem Omro, Mevi Geula L'Olam. Literally means that anyone who says something over in the name of his fellow, then he brings a Geula redemption to the world. What exactly the parameters of exactly what one must say over in the name of someone else is discussed in halacha. There's various opinions. It doesn't mean that if you ask your friend what's for lunch and they told you egg salad, that you need to say over, well, to the next person, well, Beryl told me it's egg salad, so, and he has to say, well, Shlomi told me that Beryl said that it's, and that obviously that's not a piece of information that there's any copyright on. It's not exactly laws of copyright either. We're going to try to explore what is the understanding behind this. It's clearly a very important concept. First of all, because it brings redemption to the world, which is probably a good thing. Secondly, it's because in the 48 ways with which the Torah is nikness, it says in Pirkei Avos that the Torah is nikness in 48 ways, this is the last one. Omer davar b'shem omrei, saying something over in the name of the one who said it. So there's something very great about it. Now, where do Chazal learn this from? They learn it from Esther in the Megillah. That Mordechai told Esther about the plot to assassinate Achashverosh. Actually, Achashverosh and Esther, that was the real plot. And when she repeated it to Achashverosh, she gave credit to Mordechai. In fact, the Megillah goes out of its way and adds a few words to say, "Vatomer Esther Lamelech b'shem Mordechai." From here, Chazal say that we know Kol Ha'omer Davar B'Shem Omrei, Mevi Geula L'Olam. And there's a couple of questions that you can ask on that. Why, first of all, how do Chazal know? I mean, I guess Chazal had Ruach HaKodesh, but where do you see in the fact that Esther said over in the name of Mordechai that that's what brought the Geula? In other words, Esther and Mordechai, between the two of them and between the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's, you know, acts of Hashkacha, brought a geula to Klal Yisrael, but who said that this was the particular incident that made it happen? Esther did a lot of good things. She also, give an example, Esther did not go against the word of Mordechai when he told her that she shouldn't say where she's from. Although there were plenty of opportunities for her to, yes, say who she was, and she even had cheshbonis that could be, it would have been better to reveal herself, but she didn't, because Mordechai said no. So why don't Chazal say that anybody who listens to their rabbi and listens to Das Torah is maybe Geula Olam? You see, a Geula came out. How come Chazal picked on this particular incident and they said this is something which brought the Geula about? Okay, and that's the first question. The second thing is, even if Chazal know that there's something particular about Kol Ha'omer Davar B'Shem Omrei, maybe Geula L'Olam, how do they then extract from there and tell us that when we say over something B'Shem Omrei, that's also going to bring a Geula L'Olam? What is there about Omer Davar B'Shem Omrei that has a particular power to bring a Geula to the world? That's the second question. And I guess the third question is, what is Geula? It's a word that we use a lot. We say it a lot in davening, and we're waiting for the Geula Shlema. What is it? In English, I think mostly it's translated as redemption, but the way I sort of explain this question of what is Geula is by asking if anybody can tell me the clear difference between Geula and Yeshua. Most people say, well, sounds kind of the same. It wouldn't bother me if somebody told me this should be a Yeshua Shlema, even though it's not the word. What exactly is the protocol of Geula? And if we understand what that is, maybe we'll be able to go backwards and understand the Maimar Chazal of Kol Ha'omer Davar B'Shem Omrei. So let's look at it. There's another Gemara here, another Chazal in Maseches Megillah, which says that when the day that Haman started having a bad day, right, he came into Achashverosh with intention to have Mordechai hung on that particular day, and things went sour. Achashverosh didn't have a good night's sleep. He woke up and he heard about what Mordechai had done for him, right? You see the connection. And he was of a mind to reward Mordechai that day. He didn't tell Haman his intentions, his plans. And when Haman when he asked Haman's advice, somehow Haman misinterpreted this question as being about him, and he thought that it was about a reward that he was going to get, and he kept on piling on more things that we have to do for Mordechai. We have to do this, we have to do, for not for Mordechai, for the guy who's getting this reward, who ultimately turned out to be Mordechai. This was a tremendous blow to Haman, who hated Mordechai as Simas Maves. Obviously, it was not going to work out to hang Mordechai that day. And he went looking for Mordechai with a very downcast, feeling inside of him. He finds Mordechai, and the Gemara says that he found them, and they were learning. There's two opinions. The Gemara says here, just a second. Ashkechei found the Yasfi Rabbanon Kamei, that the Rabbanon were sitting in front of Mordechai, umachviluhu, and they were showing or learning about Hilchos Kmitza. The Rabbanon. They were showing it to the Rabbanon. Now, the Gemara says Hilchos Kmitza was what they were learning. The Medrash Rabba says that they were learning Hilchos Karban HaOmer, because it was the day of the bringing of the Omer. It was the 16th day in Nisan. Rashi seems to make sort of a combination of them. He says it was Hilchos Kmitza. Doyrish bin Yon of Shayim, that was the Indian of the day. Because Shish Asr bin Nisan Hoye, Shish Asr bin Nisan Yom Tnufas HaOmer. So it seems that even if they were actually holding by the exact halacha of Kmitza, but it was because the big sugi of the day was Karban HaOmer. And Haman proceeds to ask them what they're learning and what's it all about. And the Gemara doesn't go into exact detail, but it seems that they explain to him the Indian of Karban HaOmer. And he says a statement, he says that I see, after hearing this whole thing, So Haman says, Amr lehu, asim lekumtsa kimcha didchu, I see that the little bit of flour, or barley flour, of yours has come. V'dochi asara alfi kikr kaspa didi. And it's pushed aside my 10,000 kikr kasev. I have a tremendous weight of silver, probably fill this room or more. And your little bit of flour, I sort of shoved it to the side. Haman was beginning to feel the beginning of mortality, little intimations of it coming his way. He certainly didn't give up yet. He still tried to maintain his position, but he started getting the first little hints and inklings that maybe I'm on my way down. And somehow he understood that that has to do with the sugya that they were learning of Kmitza Saimer, which is very odd. It sounds very poetic and very profound, this statement that your little bit of flour has pushed aside all of my silver. But what does he mean? What does it have to do one with the next? Right? What does the flour and what does the kmitza have to do with Haman's, possible downfall? So, there's another chazal which explains to us the understanding behind Karban HaOmer. And it asks something to the effect of, why did the Rabbanei Shalom command us to bring a Karban HaOmer? Most Karbanos have an understanding behind them. I mean, it's our job to try to investigate and find out why Hashem wants us to do all the mitzvos. So Chazal say, what's the Karban HaOmer? What does Hashem need that little bit of barley flour in order to allow me to eat the produce of my field? Karban Chatas, we understand. I did a sin. I need to somehow show that I want to come back to the Rabbanei Shalom. Karban Oila is a karban which is just an uplifting experience of Ruchnius that I want to grow. I want to shtaig. What's the Karban Oimer? So it says that the following thing. The Rabbanei Shalom says, if probably of all the jobs that exist in the world, a farmer might be the most physically demanding, certainly in the olden times before they had all the machinery. Physically demanding and very fraught with uncertainty of all the jobs that there were. So a farmer could really look at a successful year of produce and pat himself on the back. What a wonderful job he did. When he finally sits down to eat that first loaf of bread or whatever it may be that's come from his hard labor, he feels pretty good. This is what I did. This is what I accomplished. So the Rabbanei Shalom says, as if to the farmer, says, you may have plowed And you may have seeded the field, and watered the field, and weeded the field, and harvested, and done all of the jobs that go along with producing this loaf of bread. But you don't realize something. When you went to sleep at night, I made sure that the rains came at the proper time, not too much, not too little, not in the first 2 weeks after planting, which would destroy the seeds. I brought the sun the next morning, which allowed the plant to receive its nutrients from there and to start to grow. I made sure the bugs stayed away so that they didn't come and, you know, destroy the beginning of the roots and the plants as they grew. So really, who gets credit here? You think that you get credit because of all the work. You can look and see the hours you've logged, and you'll say, I did a great job. But you don't even realize that in a quiet way, the Rebbeinu Shlomo was the catalyst for way more things. And not only is more things, but things that you have no control over. You can never bring the sun. So who really gets credit here? Says the Rebbeinu Shlomo, before you start eating from the new produce, from the new fields, from the new wheat, just remember who really brought it. The Karban Ha'omer represents that understanding that it comes, I'm behind the scenes, the Rebbeinu Shlomo says, I'm pulling the strings. Don't forget about me. Remember who's really behind everything. That's the understanding, or perhaps the main understanding of what is meant by the Karban Ha'omer. So let's go back to Purim for a minute. We all know that the Purim story happened at a time of what's called Hester Panim, when the Rebbeinu Shlomo was hidden from view. In fact, the entire Megillah shows us that by never mentioning Hashem's name explicitly. There's no Shem Hashem in the Megillah. To show that the Shem Hashem, the Yudke Vavke of Hashem, was as if not there. It looked as though it was a time of complete darkness. In fact, if you look at the story of the Megillah, not everybody realizes, but it took a long period of time, between 7 and 9 years, for the whole story to unfold. When you hear the Megillah as a child, somebody would ask you, how long was the whole story? It's about a year and a half, 2 years maybe. It doesn't seem to be taking so long, but really, the Megillah unfolded over a long period of time. There were a lot of political changes. If you learn the Vilna Gaon on the Megillah, you see that it was literally full of palace intrigue and plotting one against the next. There's a lot of stories there. What happened? At the end of this time, Mordechai and Esther sat down and said, this all seemed to be kind of happenstance. Like we read the Megillah, it doesn't seem like happenstance. We see clearly the Yad Hashem. But they didn't see it then. There were a million things that happened over that period of time. How did the Megillah get written? Mordechai and Esther said, let's try to look back and find, where did the Rebbeinu Shlomo, you know, do something that was pivotal? Where did he move the story along? And they said, this incident was important. The story of Bigson and Seresh was important. This mice over here. And they put together something which reads as a narrative. It seems as though this was written, you know, as a story. But it didn't look like a story. Nobody else would have been able to identify all of these points and create a narrative that shows the Yad Hashem. That's what the Megillah's Esther really is. In fact, the Sfarim say that the word Megillas Esther, besides meaning the book of Esther, the scroll of Esther, means Megillat, from the word Ligalot. Esther means the hidden. Ligalot et Esther. That's the point. In fact, the Sfarim say more, that every person in his own life has an obligation to write his own Megillas Esther. To look back, at whatever point the person is, he's at a certain point in life, things are going pretty well, he needs to look back and say, how did I get here? Right? What was it that made a tremendous change? And usually, you will find that it's tiny little incidents. I live in Eretz Yisrael. I didn't go there intending to stay there. I went for 2 years, 3 years, like a lot of, you know, Yungalite, place to start off my marriage. And today I'm there already, 18 years. Unless, I don't know, Shlomo, it's not my case to move to England, but short of that, I'm probably going to be there for another 18 years, Baruch Hashem. And I one time made this cheshbon. Well, how did I stay there? My whole family pretty much lives in the States. My wife's from Canada. I don't really have roots in Eretz Yisrael besides ones that go back thousands of years. So what am I doing there? And I tracked it down to having bumped into somebody on a bus. And we rode together on the bus for two stops. He introduced me to an opportunity to make a parnasa in Eretz Yisrael, and that was what kept me there. Eventually, I made a lot of money in a short period of time. Well, without going into the details, I was still in Kailu, and I managed to make really much more money than I could imagine a Kailu younger man making. That kept me in Eretz Yisrael, because it didn't make sense to go back to America. To America costs way more. I had no parnasa there. So I stayed. Eventually, I lost all that money. Well, like, but Makah Achat. Yeah, actually, it was an American that took me for it. But, and Halavai made off. They didn't have that much money. And I was kind of desperate. And the Rabbi Shlomo put, I run a seminary called Pninim, and literally right after I lost that, and I didn't know how I was going to pay next month's electric bill, the opportunity to run the school came up. So although I had always said I'm not teaching girls, something I don't want to do because my father has done that for many years, so usually you got to do something different, but that's it, you know what I mean? Essen daf min essen. So I took the job. And kind of looking at it later, I realized that I never even had that money. It was the Rabbi Shalom's way of fooling me to stay in Eretz Yisrael. It was like a game he was playing. He lent me the money and said, here, Bubbly, you think you're rich? Stay here. And then I stayed long enough that I got stuck. Klemish, right? Always got stuck. And then he said, okay, you're here, you're stuck, fine, let's take away the money. In the meantime, Baruch Hashem, you know, it's been almost 10 years we have a school. I've opened another school on the back of this the second year. And all of the people who've come to this school, and myself and my family and my personal steiging has been changed because of it. It all happened because I met this guy on a bus who introduced me to something, and from there it just flourished. That's what's meant, I think, by Legalot at the Hester, to go back into one's own personal story and see, what is it? Where was that moment that made things happen? And usually it's very subtle and almost not noticeable. So that's what Mordechai and Esther did. They went back and they said, the Rabbi Shalom was running this show the whole time. Let's try to find where he made his moves, everything that he did. That's what Megillas Esther really consists of. And they were teaching the Bnei Yisrael of their dar to go away from this Hester Panim, to find the Rabbi Shalom in their lives, even though he's not always apparent and he's not always visible. Chazal and Svarim tell us, how does Hester Panim come about? It's not as if the Rabbi Shalom gets into a mood one day and says, okay, that's it. Now I'm going to disappear. Let's see what you guys are going to do about it. We make Hester Panim. It says, Kamayim Panim al-Panim, that the Rabbi Shalom looks at us when we look at him. We turn away our faces first. When we turn away, the Rabbi Shalom says, look, I don't go where I'm not invited. You don't want to have a connection to me, I'll turn away as well. And eventually it seems as though he's not there anymore. The Kabbalah says he sends down Malachim to run the world, and that the Malachim are the ones who are running it on his instruction, so to speak. But that's what Hester Panim is. The way one gets out of Hester Panim, and the way the Klal gets out of Hester Panim, is to turn back. And to start looking for the Rabbeinu Shalom in the mist and in the clouds where he doesn't seem to be, we look for him and we say, oh, there he is. He can't hide from me. It's almost like a game that children play of hide and go seek. Right? The Rabbeinu Shalom hides and we have to find him. But he hides because we weren't ready for his full revelation. We weren't ready to be in constant touch with him. We didn't want him in the room when we were busy with certain things. So the Rabbeinu Shalom, stay away. And that's how one undoes Hester Panim, and that's what Mordechai and Esther taught the people of their generation and put into the Megillah. There's many other examples, we don't have time to go into all of them, where you see that this was the Yesod, finding the Rabbeinu Shalom when it seemed as though he didn't want to be found, it seemed as though he was hiding. So we can see now, both Chazalim that we said before, first of all the story with the Karban HaOmer and Haman's reaction to the fact that they were learning Karban HaOmer. First of all, you realize it doesn't make sense that they should have been learning about Karban HaOmer. Why not? There was no Beis HaMikdash. They couldn't bring the Karban HaOmer that year. And as far as everybody knew, the next year, they were all going to be dead. Right? Purim was going to happen before the following year, so it's like Hilchos LeMashicha, like it says. There's no reason to learn this. You're never going to get to. So the very fact that they were learning the halacha of the kmitza of how to do, how to bring the carbon omer, told Haman that these people are not giving up. He was banking to a great extent on the fact that he knew that the Yidden were in Hester Ponim. He knew that they were in Golas and very disconnected from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And suddenly he comes into the Bris Medrash and he said, they're learning. The Bris Medrash is going to be built. This is how we're going to do it. He says, what base of Medrash? That's not happening. But that's where you started these faint stirrings of, uh-oh, maybe there's something going on that I don't realize. And then when they explained to him the depth, the meaning behind the carbon omer, that even when the Ribbono Shel Olam, right, we said a farmer plants, he does all the work, and the Ribbono Shel Olam says, wait a second, don't forget about me. Behind the scenes, hidden, I was really doing everything. So you have to be makir that. And Haman said, that means that even when it's a time of Hester Ponim, where we don't see the Ribbono Shel Olam, where he seems to be uninvolved, the Jews recognize that he is involved, and you can't get... Not just you can't get away from him, you don't want to get away from him. You want to recognize that Hashem runs our lives and he helps us along the way. So that's the pshat in that chazal. What does Omer Davar B'Shem Omer really do? It gives credit where it's due. I come in and I say, Gaval de Gavart, let's say, and I want you to think I'm brilliant. No, not this one. I want you to think I'm some brilliant Talmud Chacham. Really, I heard the whole thing from someone. So I'm mechuyev to say it over B'Shem Omer. Right? I need to say, no, don't give me credit. The credit is due to the hidden hand behind which pushed me in that direction. This particular part is a conglomeration of several people, so I don't know if I'll be halacha mechuyev to say it. It's based on the morale. I'm going to say a few things on the morale just to be mekayim Omer Davar B'Shem Omer. But that's what Omer Davar B'Shem Omer means. It's that I would like to take credit for it. I think it's my thing, but it's not. I have to be my Dala Emes and find where does it really come from. And that Mida is the very Mida that Esther displayed. A, she taught us about in the Megillah, and B, she displayed in a personal sense. She didn't take credit for uncovering the plot with Achashverosh, and where she could have. In fact, the whole Megillah, Esther and Mordechai are very self-effacing, as it were, so that they don't talk about their greatness at all. They're like bit players. They're barely there. Everything is someone else is doing it. They could have taken, if I would write the book, I would have a lot more about me. How smart I was, and I'm a gewaldige chap, and I probably mentioned that I speak 70 languages, and that's how I heard it. They're garnished. They don't talk about themselves. They're not looking to take credit for their own brilliance or for their own godless. They're looking to give it all back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That is embodied in the pasuk that says, "Vatomer Esther LaMelech B'Shem Mordechai." It says in Sfarim that it could have said, "Vatugad LaMelech," who was told to the king that there was a plot on his life. No, it says, "Vatomer Esther LaMelech B'Shem Mordechai." From there, we jump forward to Achashverosh having a sleepless night, and he goes back to that incident, and from there, we see the Geula flowers. Why does Geula have to do with this? Because this is what Geula is. Geula is bringing the Ribbono Shel Olam back into the world, back into our lives. And this Midah is the same thing, bringing the Ribbono Shel Olam from his hidden vantage point back into our lives. That's the Chayr of the Pshat, and Omer Davar B'Shem Omer, that's what saying over something in the name of someone else has to do with bringing Geula. And that's why it's not only Esther and Mordechai, but even we, if we're makbid on this, we're not been on being emes about it, and not taking the credit where it doesn't really belong to us, but we develop that midah in ourselves that says, I'll tell you the truth, it's not me, it was so-and-so told me a dvar chachma, I want to tell you over. If we can develop that midah with people, we can also develop it with the Ribbono Shel Olam and start finding him in our lives. Now, to take it just a drop further, it's an unbelievable ma'aral that says like this, Hester Ponim means that Klal Yisrael is in Golus. Geula means that we are coming out of Golus. The Maral says, take a look at the two words. Geula, which means exile, and Geula. It's almost the same thing. It's almost the same exact word. What's the difference? The difference is an Aleph. Letter Aleph. What's an Aleph? Aleph is one. Yichud HaShel Olam, Mr. Ribbono Shel Olam. How does one go into Golus? What's the process of Golus? People think, and the first thing they imagine as far as what does Golus mean is that the Baruch Hashem kicked us out of Eretz Yisrael. We kicked out of our land. That's what Golus consists of, but it's a tais. That's the end result of Golus. The beginning of Golus is, like we said, when we kicked the Baruch Hashem out of our lives. Each individual Jew makes a decision, do I want the Rabbanu Shalom in my life or do I not want him? And it's called Shchinta Begalusa. One person says, no, not interested. Another person says. Eventually we reach critical mass and enough people are saying to the Rabbanu Shalom, we don't want you in our lives. So at that point the Rabbanu Shalom says, fine, I don't go where I'm not invited. And he turns around and that becomes a matziv, a situation of Hester Panim. Eventually the Rabbanu Shalom just, in a logical way, says, listen, Eretz Yisrael is my backyard. If we don't have anything to do with each other, so you are cordially uninvited. And he throws us out. But that's the end result. Which means, obviously, that going back to Eretz Yisrael doesn't mean we're out of Golus yet either. Right? That just means we came back and we knocked on the door and said, can we come in? But we're still not out of Golus. The way to get out of Golus is, again, for each person on his own to have this hakara that the Rabbanu Shlomo needs to be in my life. And it says, many Tzvarim talk about the idea that a person can be living in a time of Gula. You can live in your own personal time of Mashiach when everybody around you might not be there. What does it mean? That you have the Rabbanu Shlomo, he runs your life, he's with you every step of the way. You can have your own personal Gula, your own personal redemption. And that's what it means. The word Gula and Gula is, like we said, the Aleph. Bring the Aleph, that the Rabbanu Shlomo, back into the life, back into the Word, and Gula turns into Gula instantaneously. That's what's hiding. So how does that happen? Like we said, Imr Davar B'Shem Imr, it means that I find the one who really deserves the credit. I make sure not to ignore the force, the power behind who I've become and what I can do. That's Geula. That's finding the Rabbanu Shlom. Of course it's maybe Geula La'ayla that brings Geula to the world. I'll show you just two, so we see that the words of Chazal are so incredibly exact. Two more points, very quickly. Why did they say, Kol ha'aymer davar b'shem aymer? Wouldn't it be more appropriate to say, Kol ha'medaber davar b'shem davroi? Or Kol ha'aymer amira b'shem aymeri? They sort of mix and match. Kol ha'aymer davar b'shem aymeri. So, you know, the Maral talks about the idea of why the word davar has multiple meanings. The ones which you're most familiar with are davar is a thing and davar is a word. Why is a thing a word? So I'll say, to be an arichas, but I'll just say it quickly to get to the point, is he says, well, everything in the world, an object in the world, was created, as we know, through the word of Hashem. Hashem spoke and the thing came into being. And he says, more, he says that it's not only that Hashem spoke once, he speaks constantly. Hashem midaber, and through his word, the thing exists. So I heard from my Rebbe, Moshe Shapiro Shlita, he says that it's more than that. It doesn't stop there. It goes on. Hashem speaks, the davar comes into being, v'hadavar midaber, and the thing speaks. Everything in the world speaks. That's why it's a davar, because it's speaking. Now what is it saying? It's saying that the Rabbi Shlomo made me. It's saying, I am a davar, these are my qualities, this is my makeup, my constituency, and it can only be, you can look at a tree and find the Rabbanu Shalom, if you look at it properly. What do you have to do to find the Rabbanu Shalom in a tree? You need to listen. What is the tree telling me? And if you listen properly, you listen closely, you hear that the tree is saying, let's go back to Hashem, that Hashem made me. Hu medaber, ma hu medaber, ma Hashem dibel. He speaks that which Hashem spoke. Okay, so now what's my job? My job now is to speak further and to teach those, the uninitiated, the people who don't know how to listen, they don't know that the tree is talking, Bechlal. I have to tell them, listen, there's a world out here which is talking to us. So look at what Chazal have said here. Kol ha'oimer davar b'shem oimrei. Anybody who says a thing, not says a word, I'm saying a thing. I'm telling you about a banana. Look at the view. Have a Victor Miller you've heard of? He can give you 10 hours on a fruit salad. Right? the banana peels like this, and it doesn't get yellow until it's ripe. Every piece of fruit in the world, everything that Rishon made, tells us that I was made by God. That's what it says. My job is to listen and to tell someone else, whether it's my family, whether it's my chavrusa, it's the person I work with. I have to just tell him. I have to be Omer Davar. I have to say the thing, B'Shem Omer, in the name of the one who said it, who is the Rabbeinu Shalom. And what happens if you've done that? It means you've taken Hashem into the world, into a world of nature and science, which seemingly has no mocking for Rabbeinu Shalom behind it, and you brought him into the world. You brought a geula, like we said, the aleph into the geula. But one more word that says, maybe geula la'olam. What is la'olam doing here? Just maybe geula, you bring redemption. The world is called la'olam. Why is the world called la'olam? Because it says that the Rabbeinu Shalom did a ha'alama. He hid himself. Milashon helem. He said, I made a world, and then I retreated behind the curtains. What happens when you find the Rabbeinu Shalom and you say, come out behind the curtains? You bring him out into public view. You've brought a geula la'olam, to the helem, to the hiddenness. So kol ha'omer davar b'shem omrei is telling us that when we find anything in the world, an incident, an object, a happening, an occurrence, an event, we need to say it over in the name of the one who's really speaking, which is the Rabbeinu Shalom. And with that, we'll be bringing geula la'olam, to the hiddenness, to where Hashem hides himself. We'll be revealing the Shem Hashem for everyone to see. Everybody should be zeicha to a personal geula. May it be a main on all of Klal Yisrael as well.